Excellent. Would you guys just celebrate the band one more time? I told you last week we're going to be going back through time. So that was the 60s. We're moving forward from there next week. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And we are in a conversation right now called A Grown Up Love, and we are having fun with this. And last week, we walked through what is currently the number one prom song, and as we walk through the next few weeks, we're going to be going back by decade to be able to talk about which was one of the top. There's arguments about which one the exact top was, but the best prom song from that decade. And so it was very appropriate to be able to bring in a Sinatra one here at Hoboken Grace and to get things started with that one. If you haven't been with us, right now we're in the middle of this conversation, and we're looking at relationships, and specifically looking at, okay, how do we put aside those childish ideas of love that we've grown up with that we cling to, that if we're not careful can really rob us of what God has in store for us when it comes to love. When it comes to loving well, how do we, the way that Paul says it in 1 Corinthians 13 is, he says this, he says, when I was a child, I spoke and thought and reasoned as a child, but when I grew up, I put away childish things. And all of us have them. We have these childish ideas of love. Last week we talked about one of them, and we began with this childish idea that they lived happily ever after because they found one another. If I just find the right relationship, then I'm going to live happily ever after. And the reality that doesn't happen for anyone, no matter what you believe about the movies, it doesn't happen. And so we talked about how we have to put that aside. We have to get rid of that childish idea of love and understand that the love that we crave and the love that satisfies us is only found in one place. And that's in Jesus. And we began to put away these childish things. How do we get rid of those things that would rob us of love so that we can experience all that God has for us in it? And that's exactly what 1 Corinthians is doing. As he's walking through this passage in 1 Corinthians 13, he's trying to help them identify their childish ideas, and he's giving them a replacement. And so as we walk through the next couple of weeks, we're just going to break this down. He says, love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It's not irritable, and it keeps no record of being wrong. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up. Love never loses faith. Is always hopeful and endures through every circumstance. He said, this is what love actually looks like. You thought that love looked like this. But this is what love actually looks like. And he's getting really specific. He said, no, you've got to replace what you thought with this. And he starts off, he says, how can I help you understand love? What's the best way to be able to help you understand what love is as opposed to what you thought? What's the best? Love is patient. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't hear that and think, yes, yes. It's really interesting. The more time I spend with this passage, the more I'm confused about why it's read at so many weddings. Because we must be completely dishonest with ourselves about what the passage actually says. There aren't many of us who go to our wedding day saying, yes, patience. I get to be patient. I can't wait to be patient. There aren't many of us, I just lie in bed dreaming of the day I'm going to find that person I get to be patient with for the rest of my life. I just can't wait. It was patience at first sight. Patience at first sight. I found him. I found her, the person I get to be patient with for the rest of my life. It puts a whole different spin on that story of, I knew from the moment I met her that I'd have to be patient with her the rest of my life. I knew from the moment I met her. He says, how do I help you understand? How do I help you understand what love is? Love is patient. No, Paul. Love isn't patient. Love is when you find someone who's so good, you never have to be patient with them again. That's what love is. Love is when you meet that person who's so good and so perfect, and they see life the way that you see life, and you're moving in the same direction, that you never really have to be patient again. See, our childish idea of love is this: I love you because I don't have to be patient with you. And we love people we don't have to be patient with. I hate people I have to be patient with. I have to be patient with my enemies or people who annoy me. Love is supposed to be where we don't have to be patient anymore. He says, no, you've got to get rid of that childish idea of love. And he doesn't put it at the end of the list. He puts it at the beginning of the list. Which shouldn't surprise you if you've ever been in a relationship before. But we continue to hold on to this childish idea that love, true love, great love, would be an absence of patience or an absence for the need for patience. He says, no. Love at its core is patient. It's patient. But how do you become patient? Have you ever tried it? A lot of you have been told you need to be more patient. Probably by the person you're in a relationship with. How do you do that? How do you become more patient? And the tricky thing about patience is, how do you work on being impatient? You don't experience it until you failed. As soon as you failed, all of a sudden you realize you need to work on it. I don't think many of us walk around saying, you know what, in a couple minutes I'm going to be impatient. Not a lot of us make the choice to say, oh, I want to be impatient right now. As soon as you realize you need to work on it, you've already failed. So how do you become patient? What does that look like? Some of you have just told yourself over and over again, gotta be more patient, gotta be more patient. How's that working? How's it working? It doesn't work. How do you become patient? Patience is one of those interesting things where we try to tackle the behavior, but the behavior isn't the problem. The behavior is a natural outworking. It's a natural byproduct of something else. It's born out of something. So therefore, it's almost impossible to change the behavior. You have to take a couple steps back. You have to look at, okay, what is the core here? What is this being born out of? Impatience is born out of expectation. You have an expectation. You have an expectation of how long something is going to take. You have an expectation of when you're going to be somewhere. You have an expectation of how something is going to go. You have an expectation. When that expectation is not met, then you become impatient. You have an expectation of how long you're going to stand in line at the grocery store. When the person in front of you pulls out that coupon book, that expectation is shattered and you become impatient. You have an expectation of how long it's going to take you to find a parking spot. You have a long expectation. But if it exceeds that expectation, you become furious is the word. Furious is the word. We have expectations. And in relationships, we have all sorts of expectations. We have expectations of every relationship that we're in. Friendship, romantic relationship, marriage, we have a ton of expectations. If you watch it, most of your frustration is born out of an expectation. Now, that may be a good expectation. But there's an expectation there that you have of the other person. I have an expectation of how you're going to treat me. I have an expectation of how you're going to act. I have an expectation of what it is that you're going to value. I expect you to value being on time the way that I value being on time, and therefore I expect you to be ready at a certain time. And when that expectation is not met, then all of a sudden there's incredible impatience. I have an expectation of how you're going to value our finances, how you're going to handle our finances. When you don't do that, there is impatience. And kindness goes right with it. Because as soon as patience goes out the door, kindness begins to make its way out the door as well. It's born out of an expectation. And when you mess up my expectation, I become impatient. And I start saying things like, what's wrong with you? How come you can't get this right? Sorry, I know you guys don't think those things. I'm just talking to myself today. Why are you messing up my plan? This is why we struggle with patience when it comes to our kids, because our kids very rarely accommodate our expectation for life. I'll just give you a heads up. If you don't have kids yet and you're thinking about it, just throw out every expectation you have for the rest of your life. Everyone. Because they are going to constantly mess up those expectations. Constantly. And so we become impatient. So how do you change that? Do you just get rid of all your expectations? You couldn't do that if you tried. You have expectations of the other person. Oftentimes, those are good things. You expect them to treat you a certain way, and you should expect them to treat you a certain way. Expectations aren't bad. Sometimes we can have ridiculous expectations, but even if you tried, you couldn't. So then how do you become patient? Again, patience is born out of something. Just like impatience is born out of expectation, patience is born out of something. It's interesting, as he begins this, he says that love is patient and kind. Now, the more that you read through the scriptures, and again, this doesn't happen because you read through it really intensely one time and you understand all of it. It happens because you read through it multiple times. You keep reading through it year after year after year after year after year after year. The longer that you do that, the more that you study the Bible the way that we talk about it here at Hope, Hope, and Grace, where you're just taking it in on an ongoing basis over and over and over again, all of a sudden you'll read through certain passages and you'll say, wait a second, I read that somewhere else. And you'll be able to make connections between this whole picture, the big picture of what God is trying to introduce into your life. When you hear him say love is patient and kind, for those of you who've been reading this for years, it should immediately trigger in your mind another passage. Because there's another really famous passage where Paul says, listen, there's something that's patient and kind. Let me take you to it. It's found in the book of Galatians, Galatians chapter 5. Galatians chapter 5, we're hearing, and the scriptures are explaining to us what the fruit of the Spirit are. Listen to what it says. It says, but the Holy Spirit produces this kind of fruit in our lives. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Do you think it's a mistake that he listed both of them in the exact same order? No. And this is very intriguing because he comes to us, he says, how can I help you understand what love is? Love is patient and kind, which immediately should draw our attention back to Galatians chapter 5. The fruit of the Spirit, is patience and kindness. You see, patience is born out of something. And sometimes we'll come to Galatians chapter 5, and I've heard people talk about teach Galatians chapter 5 this way, where it walks through the fruit of the Spirit and says, okay, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness. You need to work on that. Go produce that in your life. I've heard people say that. You need to, and you walk out of that conversation completely overwhelmed because you're saying to yourself, how in the world do I work on those things? That's not actually the message of Galatians 5. Galatians 5 isn't coming to you and saying, you need to love, you need to be joyful, that's not what he's saying. He's saying, this is the fruit of God's Spirit in your life. In other words, this is the natural byproduct. Again, we're working on the behavior, and God's saying, stop. The behavior is the natural outworking of what's happening inside. The behavior is born out of something. That's why he says it's fruit. It's a natural thing. It's a natural product of God's Spirit in your life. And so he's coming to us in Galatians chapter 5 and saying, as you draw close to God's Spirit, as you increase in intimacy with God's Spirit, the natural outworking or behavior that becomes a part of your life is patience and kindness amongst all these others. So when he comes back and he says, love is patient and kind. He's not coming to you saying, you need to work on this. He's coming to you in a very real way, saying to us, you have to understand at the core of being able to love is God's Spirit and the fruit of his Spirit in your life. You can walk out of here today and say, I'm going to work on being patient. I'm going to work on being patient. You will struggle with it the rest of your life. The way in which God instructs us to work on patience doesn't have anything to do with the behavior. It has everything to do with our intimacy with him. Because as you draw close to him, and you experience his Spirit, the natural outworking of that is patience. As you draw close to him, as you experience his Spirit, his patience begins to wear off on you. Jesus talked to his disciples about this as it pertains to forgiveness. Matthew chapter 18, Jesus is talking to his disciples, and Peter's trying to figure out how many times he has to forgive people. Peter, as you read through the stories and as you read through Jesus' life, you see Peter is pretty much impatient and annoyed with everyone around him. Everyone is falling short of the expectation, including Jesus oftentimes. Peter gets very impatient with Jesus several times. When Jesus is talking about how he has to die, when Jesus wants to wash Peter's feet, he's like, no. He struggles with patience. And as you come to this passage, he's trying to figure out how patient do I have to be with other people? How many times do I have to forgive these other people? Listen to what it says, Matthew chapter 18. It says, then Peter came to him, Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? Seven times? And he thinks that he's setting the bar high. Right? How many times, I wonder as you come to this passage, if he's thinking to himself, how many times do I have to forgive these other disciples that you put around me before I get to vote them out? Because you and I know it should just be the two of us. And he comes, he says, how many times am I supposed to forgive these people? I'll go really high. The biblical proper holy number is seven. Let's go seven. How impressed are you with me now, Jesus? Listen to Jesus' response. It says, no, not seven times, Jesus replied, but 70 times seven. That's not an exact number. Some of you are adding that up. Looking at your spouse saying, you got two left. You got, it's just about over. With that number, what he's saying is, no, it's infinite. You just keep forgiving. It's ironic that Peter asked the question, isn't it? The one who's going to be forgiven for the ultimate denial of Christ. Jesus says, no. You just keep forgiving. And then he tells this story. Listen to what it says. He says, the kingdom of heaven can be compared to a king who decided to bring his accounts up to date with servants who had borrowed money from him. In the process, one of his debtors was brought in who owed him millions of dollars. He couldn't pay, so his master ordered that he be sold along with his wife, his children, and everything he owned to pay the debt. He's like, he says, no, Peter, it's kind of like this. It's like a master who, someone owes him everything, millions of dollars, owes him his very life. It's gotten so bad. He says, but the man fell down before his master and begged him, please be patient with me. I will pay it all. Then his master was filled with pity for him, and he released him and forgave his debt. He's like, he owes him his very life, everything. He's so in debt, there's no way he could ever pay it. And the master looks at him and says, okay, I forgive you. He wipes out the debt. He gives him his life back. He said, but when the man left the king, he went to a fellow servant who owed him a few thousand dollars. He grabbed him by the throat and demanded instant payment. His fellow servant fell down before him and begged for a little more time. Be patient with me and I will pay it, he pleaded, but his creditor wouldn't wait. He had the man arrested and put in prison until the debt could be paid in full. He said, Peter, you're looking at it the wrong way. He said, the kingdom of heaven is like this. And in a very real way, he's saying to Peter, Peter, you owe me everything. Peter, you understand, you owe me everything. Even your very life. He said, but the kingdom of heaven, it's not a master who demands that the debt be paid. He said, the kingdom of heaven is a master who's forgiven that debt. So when some of the other servants saw this, they were very upset. They went to the king and told him everything that had happened. Then the king called in the man he had forgiven and said, you evil servant, I forgave you that tremendous debt because you pleaded with me. Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow servant just as I had mercy on you? And in this passage, he's saying, Peter, look at how much you've been forgiven. And he's teaching a principle, he's teaching a crucial principle. When you have been forgiven, you forgive. When you've been forgiven, you forgive. And it's the very same thing when it comes to patience. When you've experienced the patience of God, it impacts your patience with others. When you've experienced the patience of God, it impacts your patience with others. The more that you experience patience, the more that you bring it to those around you. See, the reason that patience is a natural outworking of God's Spirit in your life is because as you draw close to God, listen very carefully to this. You need to understand this. As you draw close to God, you will become more and more aware of your sin. As you draw close to God, you will become more and more aware of just how broken you are. Sometimes this throws us off because we think, I'm going to draw close to God and things are going to get really great. And they do get really great, but you also, as you come close to Him, He's going to reveal to you just how broken you are. Now, sometimes in that moment, we run because we think as we're confronting how bad it is, we think that He's going to be angry and we think that He's going to turn against us. We think that He's going to punish us for it. As you draw close to God, you're going to become more and more aware of your sin and your brokenness. But if you will trust Him enough to stay, it's there and then that you get to experience His patience and His grace. And the more that you come to intimacy with the Spirit, the more aware you are of your selfishness, the more aware you are of everything that doesn't fit His Spirit. But that's not a bad thing because in that you get to experience His patience and His grace. And as you experience Him being patient with you, it allows you to then begin to bring that into the lives of others. Because here's the thing with you and God. You're constantly falling short of the expectation. Just like the people around you are falling short of your expectation, you're constantly falling short of God's expectation. This is what Romans 3 is all about. We've all fallen short of God's glorious standard. Yet God, with undeserved kindness, declares that we are righteous. It says that this explains His patience. And the more that you experience God's patience, the more that you can begin to demonstrate it to others. This is why communion is so important. This is why communion is so important, because communion is a time of reflection. As Paul's writing to the Corinthian church and he's talking to them about communion, he says, when you go to the Lord's table, when you go to take the bread and the cup, you need to reflect on your life. You need to take a time to be introspective and to be able to ask, okay, where am I? And You need to confront your brokenness. Why? So that you can live in guilt? No. So that you can experience God's grace when you come to the table. You can experience his patience when you come to the table. And the more that you experience his patience, the more that you're able to be patient with others. This is why confession is so important. This is why confession is so important. For some of us, we run from our brokenness. God says, no. Embrace your brokenness. Don't lie to yourself about it. I live every day in the full reality of my brokenness. Because I know running from it just robs me of experiencing God's grace and his patience. When you're honest with yourself, when you're honest with those around you about your brokenness, it allows you to experience God's grace and patience. But some of you are running from it because you don't trust God that he gave his son to take your place. You don't trust him that he loves you that much. For some of you, you really struggle to be patient with others because you don't believe God's actually patient with you. And you're still living under the weight of trying to impress him or trying to oppress the people around you. And as long as you live with that weight, you will struggle with patience. As long as you live with that weight, you will struggle with patience because you're trying to impress him. You're trying to impress others. So when other people mess up your expectations, you have no patience for that. You have to trust him that he did what he said he did. That Jesus Christ took your place. To trust him, to be honest about your brokenness. But not to run from him. But to experience his patience and his grace in it. As you draw close to his spirit, as you create space and time for you to be able to experience that patience, day after day after day after day, it changes the way you interact with the people around you because you see God in your life valuing you over the expectation. Here's the thing. Listen, it's not bad to have expectations, but it is bad to value the expectation over the person. And that's what happens with impatience. I value the expectation over the person. Jesus stepped in and said, no, I value you over the expectation. You're more valuable to me than the expectation. And as you experience that with him, you can bring it to them. But you have to trust him that he is as good as he says he is, that Jesus Christ was given in your place so that you could be completely forgiven. So in the midst of your brokenness, you wouldn't have to run from him, but you could run to him and be overwhelmed by his patience and his grace. As the band comes up, we're going to walk through a couple more songs. And as we do that, I just want to invite you into a time of examination. Just to be able to engage God in this conversation and to be honest with yourself, to come to him in confession, to be honest with yourself about all the ways this past week that you've fallen short of the expectation. To be honest with him and to be honest with yourself about all the different ways that you've fallen short of the expectation, and to, in that moment, to value and to experience the incredible way that he values you more than the expectation. Experience it. Don't run from it. Allow him to love you and to demonstrate his patience and his grace. So that as we walk from here today, that we can walk into the lives of those that we love and we can make the choice that he made to value them over the expectation. to live in the fullness of love, which is not an absence of patience. The fullness of love that is patient and kind. Will you pray with me? Father, I pray that today as we talk through this and as we look at what you're teaching us about love, Father, I pray that we would become even more aware of your incredible patience with us. I pray that we wouldn't run from it, but that we would be overwhelmed by it. We wouldn't lie to ourselves about how we've missed the expectation, but that we would actually find that in being honest about it, we experience the fullness of your love. In Jesus' name, amen.